66. Become a part of the sharing economy. Participate in the front lines, the leading edge of a new way of taking capitalism down part by part by redirecting financial markets away from big corporations and into enterprises like Cable, like all of the small industries that you see emerging all around you. Be part of it. 877-500-5266. Participate in the sharing economy and make all of this happen. We're making it happen not just for our financial enterprise, but we are doing this for ourselves, for our own voices, for our communities.
That's absolutely right. And the word community is so important. There's a community radio station, there's a community of listeners, and there's a community of supporters, there's a community of volunteers, and there's a community that is Portland. Portland's a great city. Many people have moved here. You can probably tell from my accent, I moved here. I was not born here. And then you've got native Portlanders like the wonderful Arnie Haynes, and all these people contribute and make KABU happen. And it's your turn now to pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. It's incredibly important, and it'll be a great way to start your day. Air Cascadia is one of the many great shows KBOO offers you. There's also wonderful music shows later on. There's terrific news shows that I learn so much from. I'm an audiophile. I love listening to things. I'm visually impaired. So I'm devoted to listening to things, and KABU is a great resource. So pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266, because I know you agree with me. That's why you're listening. So please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. I want to thank everybody who's already called up and pledged their support, the renewing members, the new members, the people who've come in off the street. And now we're going to go to Flashpoints, and I'm looking forward to that great show. We get that from Dennis Bernstein out of KPFA, and that show has to be paid for. Nothing's free except free speech. So we have to pay for these things, and I need you to call 877-500-5266.
Flashpoints, the Columbia Generating Station nuclear power plant in Oregon dangerously refuels with a crack in the jet pump inside the reactor. We'll speak to an expert on the current dangers of this latest nuclear nightmare, and we will continue our coverage of the compelling excerpts from Dr. Helen Caldicott's Frontline Symposium, The Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction, based on the ongoing meltdown and disaster in Fukushima, Japan. I'm Dennis Bernstein, all this straight ahead on Flashpoints. Stay tuned. And you're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We are going to continue our coverage here on Flashpoints Pacifica Radio, our drumbeat coverage of the ongoing multiple nuclear nightmares that continue to unfold wherever there is a program of reactors or of nuclear weapons. Joining us to talk about the latest potential tragedy, somebody who knows a lot about this, Paul Guthrie. He works with Beyond Nuclear. He joins us from the East Coast. We're talking, Paul, now about a reactor outside of Portland, Oregon. Could you please bring us up to speed on what's happening at the Columbia Generating Station nuclear power plant?
The power station is a General Electric Mark I boiling water reactor in Richland, Washington, that is the equivalent of Fukushima Daiichi Unit 6. That's the one that didn't explode, but it was part of a complex there that experienced the tsunami and the earthquake that, in this case, Unit 6, Fukushima Daiichi, was on high ground. Well, Columbia Nuclear Power Station is the equivalent of that. It's operating on the Columbia River, and it's a big concern now and in headline news because they have been seeing cracking over the years occurring on reactor internals that are essential to safety with regard to providing reactor coolant circulation. And this particular cracking, as it has been identified by the operator, has basically, it's a degradation due to aging. In this case, you've got the high radiation fields in the reactor core are interacting with the molecular structure of the base metal for this particular component and other components, where it particularly puts a lot of stress on welds, where you have what they call dissimilar metals, where welding material is bonding base metal material. And the combination of neutron bombardment, water chemistry, and the stress that's built into when these welds cool, that stress remains there, and in this case, that creates this atmosphere of where over time these cracks can grow. It's our concern that while the operator has asked the U.S. Nuclear Regulatory Commission for an exemption, essentially, from doing inspections because they're claiming that this is a well-known degradation, a well-known deterioration. They're saying it hasn't progressed in over a decade. So they're looking to ask the NRC to forego inspections of that component. And it's our concern and the concern of safe energy advocates in the Northwest that the Northwest utilities basically do the inspections to verify their claims.
Let me just jump in here because I want to make sure that we paint the entire picture now. We're talking about a situation that comes out of the Tri-Cities. In other words, essentially in direct relation to the massive Hanford nuclear reservation, which is built right on the Columbia River. I know all about this because I traveled up there. I investigated and explored all the multiple impacts of Hanford. And this was always one of the concerns about these kinds of connections. So this is in a very vulnerable part of the country, which has already been devastated by nuclear materials, correct?
It's a compound hazard. First of all, you've got the Columbia Nuclear Power Station, which is a Fukushima-style reactor. It's located on the same site where you've got a whole series of aging high-level radioactive waste tanks that are buried in the ground and leaking, and it's situated in one of the most seismically active areas in North America. So it's a combination of hazards that warrants special attention because of the multiple layers of risk that this aging reactor, this dangerous design in a bad situation, you know, in any number of events could call upon all those safety systems at the Columbia Nuclear Power Plant to operate in the best interest of the public health and safety and the environment and the Columbia River. So, you know, we're saying, and, you know, those that are environmentally concerned in the Northwest are saying you've got to do the utmost to and use the state of the art to do inspections.
What I want to do here, Paul Gunter, is bring in Mimi German, because she is one of those activists, one of those people on the front lines in this battle of this latest nuclear meltdown. We're joined by Mimi German. She listens to us from KABU in Portland, Oregon. Welcome, Mimi, to Flashpoints.
Thanks, Dennis, and hello, Paul.
Well, it's good to have you with us. Why don't you talk about the struggle you're involved in? I mean, part of what you're trying to do is let people know that this actually exists because people are not understanding the people who live in Portland and the people who live downwind from this series of ongoing meltdowns don't really understand how it's directly implicating them.
Well, one of the things to recognize is that the Columbia Generating Station has one of the best PR teams in the nation, and their job is to have people not know that they exist, that there is a nuclear power plant in Washington State. So what people do know in Washington State and in Oregon is that while there was an attempt to build nuclear power in Washington, which used to be called WHOOPS, and WHOOPS 2, that was taken apart, that wasn't successful. Well, we do have a reactor from WHOOPS, which is called the Columbia Generating Station. So what people know is that there's the Hanford waste site. And I think just about everybody knows about the Hanford waste site, at least that it exists. So one of our problems here with CGS is that we, the activists and, you know, people involved like our teachers, my teacher, Paul, and others, Paul Gunter and Arnie Gunderson and many others, Helen Caldicott, what we all know is that the NRC, and Paul, I don't mean to speak for you, is that the NRC tends to not be the regulatory commission that is in its name. It doesn't do the job of regulating. What it tends to do is just say okay to whatever comes its way for the most part. And so when the Columbia Generating Station has problems, and it has many problems, the people don't hear about this because it gets okayed by the Nuclear Regulatory Commission by a means of different kinds of variances to be dismissed, to make allowances, to just continue work as usual. So nobody hears about this. And now that we have this crack that we found out about, They didn't tell anybody about this crack. In fact, I have something here for you, Dennis, to check out, because it's really interesting to see how much they don't want us to know about this. This is a, first of all, the press release that Columbia Generating Station just put out the other day on Saturday was for their refueling and maintenance outage. And one of the things that they say is that they set a new record for its longest continuous operational run, 683 days, when operators shut down the reactor for the start and the refueling. But they achieved what's known as a quote-unquote breaker-to-breaker run for the first time in its 30-year history, meaning, these are their words, the plant has been operating nonstop since reconnecting to the grid on June 25th, 2013, following its previous refueling outage. What it doesn't tell us, and it also goes on to tell us that it's safe and reliable, and their quote from their press release is this: this record run is about keeping our commitment to the region, meaning Washington and Oregon, to produce clean, reliable, and cost-effective power for the long term, said Mark Redman of Energy Northwest, who's the CEO. Again, we come back to producing clean, reliable, and cost-effective power. It is not clean, it is not reliable, and it is so expensive. So nobody knows this. It's like the biggest con in the Pacific Northwest. So we have to get the word out at this point. This is our biggest issue right now, is telling people we not only have a nuclear power plant called the Columbia Generating Station, which took out the name nuclear power plant in its name, but it is rated potentially the worst nuclear power plant in the United States. And we can talk about that later, but this is such a dangerous power plant. And to get people to understand that we have one and that it isn't Hanford is a real task.
All right, just hold it right there. You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio.
That's right, and you're listening to KBOO, broadcasting Flashpoints, a great show, and very, very interesting. Teresa touched on the same subject, and I'm learning about it. I haven't heard about this from any of my other news sources, and it is very scary, but it's scary enough that you need to know about it. And this is local information brought to you by KBOO, a great radio station, and I know you're enjoying all this information, and it's important to be well-informed. There's a lot of fun shows, a lot of great music shows, but it's really important to be well-informed. Otherwise, we're just living with our heads in the sand. And to keep these great shows going and to keep all this wonderful stuff on the air, I need you, we need you, you need you to pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. It's incredibly important, and it's a great way to start the day. You're supporting a radio station that is bringing you voices that speak truth to power, and that is so important. So very few people do that anymore. It's easy to be complacent. It's not easy to be angry. It's a very important thing, though, to be outraged. So please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266.
It's true, Will, what you say. It's when one actually hears what is going on in this world, there is so much news that is outraging, right? And it is actually important to use that fuel to make change, positive changes in the world around us and in our lives. And right now we're asking for you to make the change here at Community Radio by becoming a participating member, by adding yourself into our equation. It is important that this is a reciprocal relationship, and you can make it so by picking up your phone and dialing 877-500-5266 or online at kboo.fm. And back what you believe in. We know that you are listening because you value information you can use. You value opinion, fact, and news you can use. News that's relevant to your life.
You know who values that? Larry from Corvallis. Larry from Corvallis just came into our station through the front door, donated some money, pledged his support to this great station. And you can do that too. We want to thank Larry from Corvallis. And I want to thank everybody who's called up so far.
I want to thank Tigert in Southeast Portland as well. Thank you so much, Larry and Tigert. And let us thank you. Come on in. You can come down to 20 Southeast 8, just like Larry did. You may even live closer than Corvallis. It might be on your way to wherever you're going this morning in beautiful central Southeast Portland. You could maybe be a little bit farther away. Maybe your day is a little jam-packed. Then just pick up your phone right now and dial 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266, or online at kboo.fm. Your contribution of $5 a month or $10 a month goes a long way here at KBOO. It adds up to your friends and neighbors' contributions, and together we make great community radio as we all share in the funding of the station and then share in the bounty of the information, the news, the music, the arts, the theater, the poetry that comes your way through 90.7 on the FM dial or KBOO.FM online. Go ahead and contribute. However it's convenient to you, we want your participation. KBOO.FM, click the tip jar in the corner or pick up your phone and dial 877-500-5266.
You're listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. And I want to let people know, because we've been featuring excerpts from Dr. Caldicott's Frontline Symposium, The Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction. We want to let people know that this is not part of that incredible and very dynamic symposium that we're going to be playing excerpts from again in a little bit. This is a real story about one more plant, the Columbia Generating Station Nuclear Power Plant, which is on the perimeter of Hanford. Now, when we say Hanford, it's like this is a city of nuclear waste that sits right on the most extraordinary Columbia River, which many First Nations, Indigenous Nations, considered a sacred part of their life, have always and will always. This is an extraordinary story that's happening now, that's been going on for some time. The voice that you just heard was Mimi German. She's with No Nukes Northwest. And also on the line is Paul Gunter. Paul, we're running out of time. But what, in bottom line, if people do not act, if the people don't manage to restrain these maniacs, again, forgive the language, what are the dangers? Just very quickly lay that out.
Well, you know, increasing the risk to public health and safety by operating reactors that have known cracks. And the problem here is they're basing their risk evaluation on the past experience of that reactor. And how we like to describe it, I think it's appropriate, is like driving your car through your rear view mirror. You know, these aging reactors present many unknown risks with regard to how big that crack is, how much that crack will grow in the next 2 years while they're operating this reactor at very high vibration, extreme radiation exposure to these broken parts, and then let's throw an earthquake in there to add additional stress on these cracks. And you're talking about safety components that the Northwest region will be relying upon. So it's very conservative, we believe, to demand that the Columbia Nuclear Power Station not be given an exemption on these fundamental inspections, but be required to take all the fuel out of that reactor core in this refueling outage, and then not only look at the jet pump and the known cracks that are there, but look for other cracks and other reactor internal parts that are being exposed to the same stresses. And, you know, this is, I think, a very reasonable request now that we know what Fukushima and what Chernobyl, what kind of future that brings for the communities in that area.
All right. I'm out of time, but Mimi, people want to connect with you. How's the best way?
The best way is through radcast.org. It's R-A-D as in dog, C-A-S-T.org. And I want to just let everybody know, please tell your friends in Washington and Oregon that there is a nuclear power plant in Washington called the Columbia Generating Station so that they know what the dangers are. And they can learn about it through Radcast or Paul's site at Beyond Nuclear.
All right. We thank both of you for joining us on Flashpoints. We will come back to you. We're going to follow the story very closely. Very grateful to you, Mimi, up there in Portland, for bringing this to our attention. And maybe we should bring the show up there and broadcast from the perimeter of the plant or wherever the hell that thing is. Maybe we can call more attention to it. Thanks for being with us on Flashpoints. You are listening to Flashpoints on Pacifica Radio. We're going to go right to the first excerpt as we continue to feature Dr. Helen Caldicott's Frontline Symposium, The Dynamics of Possible Nuclear Extinction, with a very compelling speech by Dr. Theodore Postol. It's called, Striving for Armageddon.
First, I want to introduce Professor Ted Postol, Professor Emeritus of Science, Technology, and National Security Policy at MIT. And he's a prominent critic of U.S. government statements about missile defense. Please welcome Ted Postol.
Thanks very much, Helen. I just want to make a quick comment about what a great resource you've been over the years. And I really appreciate you inviting me to this event. And I think you've done wonderful things to advance the public understanding of these issues. And I congratulate you for it. The question that I am raising today is whether or not the danger of an accidental nuclear war between the United States and Russia is higher today than it was at most times during the Cold War. The answer to this question is unknowable using quantitative means, but I believe the information we have points strongly to the conclusion that the danger of nuclear war is now considerably higher than it was during most of the time we now call the Cold War. The reasons for this are both immediate and historic. If we are to be able to reduce the chances of an event that could well result in the complete destruction of the world we know, we need to confront and understand why we are now in the current predicament so we can begin to find ways to back away from this brink. Although I will focus here on the technical aspects of this dangerous situation, the circumstances that have led to it have both political and technical dimensions. On the political side, the relationship between Russia and the United States is spiraling downward, creating tensions that are higher than at most times during the Cold War. A large part of this downward spiral is due to the unwise Russian reaction to what was certainly been a much more unwise 25-year-long period of hostile U.S. actions toward Russia. Basically, the United States has treated Russia like a defeated and reviled foe during this 25-year period, and I have many personal experiences I could share with the audience on this. Although the analogy is far from perfect, it is as if the mistakes that are widely ascribed to the Treaty of Versailles after the end of the First World War have been repeated as if there is no memory of the consequences. In addition, U.S. and Western diplomacy has treated legitimate concerns about the security in the area the Russians call the near Russia region or near Russia zone as if none of Russian concerns have any merit. If you disagree with this assessment, and I know a lot of people who do, partly because of the circles I move in, consider how the United States would react if Russia mounted a major effort to influence the domestic politics of Panama, Venezuela, Cuba, Nicaragua, and Mexico by forming military alliances that were accompanied by commitments to sell arms and to provide military support to the governments of these countries. There are experts who have a far better knowledge of the political ins and outs of Russia's relationship with the West than I do, and since I am a technical expert, I want to focus on the technical problems that clearly and unambiguously greatly increase the chances of an accidental war that could lead to the U.S. and Russian Central Strategic Forces becoming engaged.
You are listening to MIT professor Dr. Theodore A. Postol, who spoke at Dr. Helen Caldicott's symposium on the dynamics of possible nuclear extinction. We'll get back to that, but first a quick pitch break. It's Pledge Central time, and Ani and Will join us on the air. Hi, folks.
Thank you very much, Rock. It's great to be here with everybody in this fascinating show from Dennis Bernstein. KPFA provides us with some other great shows, and we're grateful for that, but we also have to pay those folks because they can't make those shows for free. So in order to support that, how about you pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KABOO. Very easy, very quick, very convenient. We have some lovely, beautiful volunteers sitting here waiting for you to call us up and make this happen. You're part of the community. You're part of the community as a listener, but you're an active member and a valued member of the community. When you make your money count, it's going to be a great thing to do. It's going to be a great thing to do today. And I'm full of enthusiasm, and I know the lovely Ani Haynes is full of enthusiasm, and I know you are out there, because it's a wonderful world we live in, but it's getting destroyed by vicious forces, and we need to learn about these vicious forces and counter them. And KABOO does that, and so do you as a listener. Please pick up the phone, dial 877-500-5266. There are other ways to donate, of course. You can come up to our building. We're at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue. Beautiful mural out front, easy to find, just off Burnside. You can come in, have a cup of coffee, get a tour of the station, find out where your money goes, and find out what's going on here. There are many, many opportunities to volunteer and really appreciate and learn from KABOO. But if you don't have time for that, maybe you have time just to go online at kboo.fm and donate that way. But make your money count and make your opinions and your thoughts and your concerns count by dialing 877-500-5266. It's very, very important. I know you feel the same way. Please pick up the phone.
Let us know you're there. Let us know you give a damn about your community and about the world and about making positive changes to, save this world, to make it a better place, to look for social justice, work for social justice, as well as environmental justice. We were listening to Mimi Herman earlier on Flashpoints. So super fantastic. Local activist with Nuclear-Free Northwest. She's been a guest on our show, a guest on KABOO many times. It's a fantastic opportunity to let your voice be heard in support of the planet, against the nuclear industry, Utah Phillips always said, the earth is not dying, it's being killed, and the people killing her have names and addresses. And this is that place that you come to for information. KABOO is that place that gives you the information, that gives you the facts that you can then put into your own analysis and use to spur yourself on to social change. Right now, the change you need to make is to become a member of KABOO today. 877-500-5266 is the number to call. Come to the phone with your credit card, become a member of KABOO instantaneously, or let us know just a little bit every month that you would like deducted automatically from your checking account or from your credit card or debit card. Be happy to set that up. For $6.25 a month, that comes out to $75 in the course of a year, you would be able to get a 4-gig flash drive with amazing audio, including Noam Chomsky, including Glenn Greenwald, including Joseph Stiglitz, Richard Heinberg, Helena Norberg-Hodge, Michael Schumann, Carol Black, Chris Hedges, Winona LaDuke, and others. 4 gigs of information that you can share around your friends and family. And also you can ask for a tree planted in your name by Friends of Trees, but it all starts with your phone call right now. 877-500-5266. And on to Flashpoints.
First of all, I need to make it clear to everyone in this audience that the Russians have an extremely fragile early warning system. Unlike the United States, they have been unable to build a working space-based early warning system. They simply do not have one. The lack of a capable Russian early warning system is one of the greatest dangers to the United States. You don't have to be worried about Russia. You got to worry about the United States. Yet the U.S. government, and I have had many fruitless attempts to try to get this matter addressed, has done nothing at all to think about the ways to address this problem. In fact, the U.S. government has mostly spent its effort during, at least during the Clinton administration, now they don't even think about it, during the Clinton administration, making believe they were doing something about it when in fact they weren't. And I have lots of proof of that. Now, the ability to see the launch of ballistic missiles from space makes it possible to have the longest warning time of ballistic missile attack that is possible. It is a general misconception that the extra warning time provided by these space-based systems is the most important contribution to U.S. security that these systems provide. This is actually not the case. The most important contribution of space-based early warning systems is general information about the launch of ballistic missiles on a global scale. The only country in the world that has some capability to destroy parts of U.S. Nuclear strike systems is Russia. Any attack from Russia aimed at destroying or trying to destroy U.S. counterstrike capability would have to be executed as a massive coordinated strike. Our current space-based infrared systems would make it possible, within less than a minute, to know whether or not such a strike is underway. So basically, it's situational awareness. Since the Russians have no space-based early warning system, they can only observe events with radars. And the Russians have worked very hard on their radar early warning system. Now, radars are limited to line of sight. Since the Earth is round, line of sight limits severely constrain what these radars can see. That is, the line of sight limitation does not allow them to see events that occur below the Earth's horizon. This was exactly the limitation that led to a false alert of the Russian early warning system in 1995. The character of that false alert made it appear that the United States might have been making a nuclear precursor attack against Russia. At the time of this potential precursor attack, there was no tension between Russia and the United States. However, because the Russians could not see over the horizon, they had to guess that what they were observing was not what it appeared to be. If such an event occurred today, especially if there were an intensified crisis over the Crimea, Ukraine, or whatever, the assessment of Russian military and political leaders that no attack was underway would be much more difficult to settle on. Making matters worse, the United States Nuclear Force Modernization Program has been doing everything possible to increase the killing power of U.S. nuclear warheads against Russian land-based ballistic missiles and command centers. One can be sure that the Russian military is closely following this U.S. technical effort. In fact, I have had direct communications with a former chief of the general staff of the Russian Strategic Rocket Forces, directly confirming that there is an active area of research and monitoring by Russian military analysts. This, of course, is absolutely of no surprise. The products of these analyses are certainly sent up to the highest levels of Russian government. In particular, Russia now has a leader who has a very substantial background in security matters. Whether or not one dislikes or admires Mr. Putin, it is undeniable that he has an extensive interest and concerns in Russia's security posture. As such, it would be the height of folly to think that he is not fully apprised of the vulnerabilities in Russia's early warning system. This should not make us feel comfortable. So we now have a situation where the political relationship has spiraled downward. The U.S. relentless preoccupation with building nuclear warfighting machines is well analyzed and understood by the Russian political leadership, and the Russian early warning system is wholly inadequate for providing the kind of reliable and unambiguous data that could assure Russian political leadership that they are not under attack in certain ambiguous situations. Hence, I conclude that the chances of an accident that could lead to the launch of Russian nuclear forces is now at least as likely as it was during the Cold War. And in my view, it is probably higher than it was during most, although not all, of the time we call the Cold War. I would like to finish this discussion by showing you, by changing direction a bit, and show you how U.S. and Russian nuclear planners see the world relative to the actual realities. This is an important thing that all of you, I think, should understand. The U.S. is striving for greater accuracy in delivering nuclear warheads. The question a reasonable person might ask is, why? I mean, these weapons are so destructive. The first problem is that nuclear warfighters treat nuclear weapons as if they are instruments of conventional warfare that can be used in a scaled-up version of conventional wars. This conventionalization of nuclear war planning is a product of the Cold War and is still being pursued by the technical efforts within the United States and with less success, but with energy, within Russia as well. It is derived from a profoundly false belief that a nuclear war would have military objectives no different from that of a conventional war. In conventional warfare, each adversary tries to take advantage of confusion and chaos to isolate and destroy an enemy's forces piece by piece. By concentrating superior forces against weaker enemy forces, one can destroy the enemy forces so quickly that they cannot do nearly as much damage in return. So you really want to isolate the force and just chomp them up. Now, in order to achieve this goal, when fighting an adversary who is roughly the same size and capability, military planners try to find ways to concentrate their forces so that they can locally have numerical and firepower superiority. In order to do this, it is critical to be able to disrupt or destroy an enemy's command structure, communications, and mobility. This is generally achieved by attacking command and control nodes, bridges, railheads, and the like. If this goal is achieved, it is then possible for a skillfully commanded military force to take advantage of the chaos and disorder so as to crush an equally capable enemy force by destroying it piece by piece. Okay, let me show you what the Russian nuclear warfighting plan might look like, which is simply a mirror of U.S. nuclear war plans. This is a notional plan. This is by no means real, although it could be certainly real and worse. What the planner would do is the planner has these targets they want to destroy. Bear in mind, they're thinking of these weapons like they are conventional instruments of conventional war. The particular targets can be very hard to blast if you're talking about destroying them physically in terms of just breaking them up into pieces. You may not need to do that, but that's what the planners think in terms of. So, for example, if you have some port facilities here, you might put a nuclear weapon on this port facility because dock facilities require tremendous amounts of overpressure, blast pressure, to destroy them. You might have a command center under the World Trade Center. You see that little circle there shows the lethal range from the point of view of the war planner, because this shelter is underneath the Trade Center, and you need to bring tremendous amounts of blast to collapse the internal structure. I'm not saying this is realistic, I'm just telling you. And then you have all these bridges. The bridges, of course, are points where mobility would allow your enemy to move forces in some kind of fictitious conventional war. You might have a railhead, for example, at the Grand Central Station. You might have a political leadership target at Gracie Manor, and so on. So you could have, a whole bunch of targets that you could, find you need to service, in the words of the way the nuclear planners think, relative to the situation we actually face.
You are listening to MIT professor Dr. Theodore A. Postol, who spoke at Dr. Helen Caldicott's symposium on the dynamics of possible nuclear extinction. We are going to get right on back to that, but first, someone who can speak much better. Two people, as a matter of fact, Ani and Will, over at Pledge Central.
You speak real pretty.
Extinction.
You have a pretty, pretty voice.
Something we're hopefully not going to experience
That's
here.
That's right.
Yes.
With your help, right now, in fact, please do give us a call and let us know you're listening. Let us know this is the kind of program that's reaching you. Whether we can make our mouths work or not, it's the information that Flashpoints is bringing you this morning that is vitally important right now. Please do pick up the phone and dial 877-500-5266. It's easy enough to do. It just takes a couple minutes of your time, and we would dearly appreciate your participation here at KBOO Community Radio. 877-500-5266. We have only $60 left to reach our goal for Flashpoints.
$60.
We are so very excited about that. Thank you all so much for your support this morning. It's been great to hear from so many people, but right now we still have room for you because you've been putting it off a little bit, haven't you? It's time right now. Go ahead and make this call. It is a change in your day. It's an action in your day that brings change to your entire community. It's an action that empowers you and others as we access independent media through your financial support. 877-500-5266. Or stop on by, just like Greg and Allison just did. It was wonderful getting to talk to them and talking about volunteer opportunities here as they were dropping off their support financially for the station. And we're at 20 Southeast 8th. Come on in and grab a cup of coffee.
That's right. And it's very funny. Earlier, I was getting a cup of coffee for myself, and I met the two people that Arnie just referred to, and I overheard their conversation. They were talking about Michael Rupert, and I immediately knew who they were talking about. And I had a great conversation with some terrific people. And that's one of the many great things that KBOO offers you, is like-minded people, people who are thoughtful, intelligent, and care about the world they're living in, and the people who bring us these incredibly important stories. The story that they're talking about on Flashpoints right now is amazing to me. I can't believe it's 2015 and we're still in the Dr. Strangelove mentality. It's really quite terrifying. But you can show the way you feel about KBOO and about Flashpoints and about all these fascinating viewpoints by picking up the phone and dialing 877-500-5266. That's 877-500-KBOO. Couldn't be simpler, very easy, very convenient. We have some wonderful volunteers standing by for your phone call. And now is the time to make it happen.
And like Michelle, Michelle just made it happen. Michelle from Southwest Portland, a renewing member. Thank you so much, Michelle. Please, won't you join Greg? Won't you join Allison? Won't you join Michelle in joining KBOO or renewing your membership to KBOO Community Radio right now? It takes a couple minutes of your time and makes such a difference to us and your entire community. 877-500-5266 online at kboo.fm. Come on by 20 Southeast 8th. We'd love to show you around the station and you can really check things out, see how you can get even more involved in your community radio station. It's an amazing place. It's a great resource. It's independent media. It brings us information that we can use to actually make our own analysis and decide what the right action is for us to take to make this world a better place. It all starts right now with your call. 877-500-5266. Consider contributing in a monthly way. Just $5 a month or $6.25 a month gets you this 4-gig flash drive and a tree planted in your name. Friends of Trees partnering with us once again, honoring our members and offsetting some carbon. Let's go ahead and make it happen together. 877-500-5266.
Thanks a whole heap, you two. You talk pretty well. It is just a few minutes in front of 11 o'clock. I want to remind our listeners, you are listening to KBOO Portland, and this KBOO program has been made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Grendel's, a neighborhood coffee house offering organic coffee, sandwiches for breakfast and lunch, and Wi-Fi. Proud to support KBOO, Grendel's is open every day at East Burnside and 8th. Information at 503-595-9550 or facebook.com/Grendel's Coffee House.
All right, now, within the mythology of nuclear war fighting, the elimination of these targets would reduce the enemy's ability to move equipment, communicate, coordinate, so you can basically eliminate their ability to fight back. The net result is that many additional warheads are needed to be targeted for redundancy, since some of the number of warheads can be expected to fail during flight. And all in all, it is easy to see how a large number of warheads could be needed. Basically, you need to destroy these warheads, these targets. They're very hard. And also, you need to assure that they're destroyed, which means you have to have redundancy. To give you a concrete example that's anchored in history, Hiroshima was destroyed by a single nuclear weapon that had a yield of roughly 12.5 kilotons. In 1960, George Kistiakowsky, who was then a science advisor to President Eisenhower, went out to Strategic Air Command and looked at what they were doing. And one of the things he did was he asked for information about how the U.S. was targeting a Russian city that was about the size of Hiroshima, just to get an example. At that time, the nuclear war plans called for a single 4.5 megaton bomb, followed by 3 1.1 megaton bombs for the attack on this Hiroshima-sized city. So to put this in perspective, they committed 7,500 kilotons to an attack on a city that had been destroyed only 15 years earlier by 12.5 kiloton weapon. So that's where the idea of overkill begins to make sense. Now, part of the rationale for all the extra ordnance was to gain assuredness that the target would be hit by at least several of these nuclear weapons. Another part of the rationale was to assure that each of the individual targets of interest within the city were adequately damaged. Having a high damage level is an extremely important part of nuclear war planning psychology. This leads to these very large numbers. To give you a sense of the actual physical effects, this shows you the fireball from a nuclear explosion of 800 kilotons over this area. Now, down here, I've just shown a white sort of semi-transparent cloud to emphasize that the light and heat coming out of this fireball is tremendously large. It's about 2.5-3 times the light and heat coming out of the equivalent surface of the sun. And, of course, the sun heats the Earth from 90 million miles pretty effectively. And, of course, this thing is very close. So what happens is the light and heat is so intense that stone surfaces literally will shatter from the heating rate. I mean, they'll just thermally disintegrate and not necessarily burn, but thermally disintegrate. And, you know, metal will melt or evaporate. Roads will melt or evaporate. It'll be extremely intense. And, of course, you wouldn't be able to see through this